The Tick. It's time for The Kick Around, The Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is The Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, here's two guys hoping for short shorts to come back in style. Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Corner to the top of the area. Oh! Ferreira's hat trick comes on a splendid missile, upper 90. 3-0 USA. It's all coming up roses for Jesus Ferreira.
Hi to Hopi Ones, and welcome to The Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4, here on Sport Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket, where you, the good, not smelly P1s, sits around, talks a little bit of soccer and all that implies. Hey, hi, how you doing? It's me, Peter. And also in this broadcasting blowtorch and temple of broadcasting excellence is noted soccer expert Andy Dalton Swift.
Peter, how are you today?
I am good.
Yeah?
Sir?
You feeling good about your national team and its big win this week?
I was going to ask you how you were feeling
about giant?
Your one. How many four different national teams you claim allegiances to?
Yes. Let's delay that talk.
Okay.
Let's not talk about it.
Yeah,
that.
We have much to do today. I know there's a sense that there's not a lot of soccer going on, but no, you would be wrong. There is a lot of soccer to be discussed today, and we'll do that over the course of the next 2 hours. But we will start off by talking about what I think most people are into at the moment, which is the U.S. men's national team, since they've been playing of late. So am I correct in remembering this way? When we did the show last time, they had just beaten Morocco, and they were about to play Ecuador?
Yeah, no, they were
Uruguay.
About to play Uruguay the next day.
Okay, so they've played Uruguay and drew them 0-0.
Yeah, not a bad game, actually.
No.
It was a pretty entertaining game. And a bad result for the U.S.
Although Uruguay kind of rolled out their B team in the game.
A-B team. No, okay. there's some starters.
Well, when they threw out in about the 60th minute, when they did put on kind of their big boys.
Yeah.
The game took a pretty significant.
Yeah. It turned a little bit
different
at that point.
Feel. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday was the actual game that in theory means something. It's because it's a Nations League game against Grenada.
Yeah, ranked what, 175 in the world?
Oh, come on! Are they that low? I know they're in the 170s, but
okay.
I think at that point you want. I mean, the difference between 171 and 175. Andy.
Yeah, and. It was clearly the B team. I mean, it was.
Well, let me put it this way.
With the exception of the goalkeeper.
How about we state it this way? Grenada 0, Dallas 5.
That many FC Dallas players or formers?
No, they scored 5 goals.
Yes, correct. Right. And combined well. Talking about Jesus Ferreira and Areola.
Yeah, all 5 goals scored by players of Dallas.
Yeah.
4 by Jesus and 1 by Paul Areola.
Now, it was essentially the B team.
The American B team?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But Ferreira started. And so now I question whether Ferreira is in the starting 11 for Berhalter and his thinking. And I'm thinking maybe now he's thinking about putting, or at least he'll try Weah at the 9 because he didn't play him against Grenada. He's playing the A team Tuesday. When do they play El Salvador?
Well, no, I think Haji Wright is starting at the 9 on Tuesday against El Salvador.
They
that's
do.
Been, yeah,
yeah.
I think
oh,
that's
been said?
Yeah, I think.
Well, it's not Ferreira, I guess. It's Ferreira's lost because he was kind of the number one choice.
Yeah, Ethan.
Over the last few months.
Yeah, I think the El Salvador game is considered to be a harder task in theory,
on
although the Grenada and El Salvador tied in Grenada when they played each other the other
yeah,
day.
No, but, yeah.
But in El Salvador, against El Salvador, I think it's a tougher task. So I think he's saving that opportunity for Haji Wright because, you know, look, and this is really the big talking point out of this cycle, which is who's going to be the number 9 for this team? And that is a gigantic question mark. And I'm not even sure you can answer that question in June when the tournament is not till November, because form changes, injuries happen.
Right. The problem is, the U.S. is not going to have a lot, like all teams playing in this World Cup, they're not going to have a lot of opportunity to figure things out. There's one more camp after this.
But
September.
I don't even think they have any.
Two games in Europe that they're going to schedule. That's okay. What they've said. They haven't scheduled them. It's a 9-day camp. And then it's not till you go to the World Cup. Basically, you have a week once you arrive to get things ready for game one. So they don't have a lot of time.
No. So that's why I think, you know, watching, I mean, by the way, Jesus is the one of a very few number of people that have played or started in all three of these games that the U.S. has played over the course of the last 7 days. And there had been a lot, there is a tremendous amount of discourse on social media soccer channels about his qualities or lack thereof or what he, you know, and because in the Morocco game and in the Uruguay game, in particular, there were some opportunities that he's missed. And then early in this game against Grenada, specifically the header, you know, for him to finally turn it around and score four goals is exactly the medicine Jesus needed at this point.
Yes, and speaking of this game against Grenada, the first 40 minutes, it was all U.S., but they weren't able to score. And were you starting to get a little worried about this team? Like, oh, now we
well,
can, you know.
Look, here's the deal. You go through the people that were starting for Grenada, the vast majority of those guys ostensibly play at a level commiserate with the open divisions of the Sunday leagues you and I play in, okay? There are a few guys that play in USL. There are a couple of guys that, you know, play in like fourth division England. That is about as bottom of the barrel national team as it gets. So I always think when I watch these games how difficult it is for a player, for a team to figure out how to play in those games. Because sometimes part of you as a team playing well is playing against a team that in itself is structured. When you play a team that's just so all over the place, sometimes it's hard to play your game, if that makes any sense.
Yes, I think in this case, it was just, I didn't think the U.S. had any problem figuring that out. I think they were putting together good opportunities. They just weren't finishing. That was the problem. And that was going back and talking more about what Ferreira was able to do those first few games, which is put chances away, and it was and it kept happening. So I think there was a little bit of, at least on my side, once the floodgates opened, it was all fine. And I think he just needed maybe that confidence to score that first goal, and after that he maybe relaxed a little bit more.
You know when you think about what's going to happen in the World Cup and who's going to play at the number nine, I'm a big Jesus fan. I love what he does for this club here in this town. I love the fact that we've been watching this guy grow and grow. Remember, he is still only 21 years old. I'm not sure the country has the guy for that position at this point. Unlike maybe saying that maybe we feel really comfortable about midfield.
Right. I definitely the nine situation is probably with the center back pairing dilemma are the two biggest issues that the U.S. faces heading into the World Cup. Now, compared to past World Cups and past World Cup preps and getting ready for past World Cups, I think this we're miles ahead of where we've been in the past, getting a team ready for the World Cup.
So that's why, you know, I said this last week, and I'm going to say it again, and the more I think about this, the more I was kind of joking, but now I'm really serious. I feel like part of our responsibility here is to set expectations and make people understand that, you know, progressing out of a group stage in the World Cup isn't as easy and as simple as I think a lot of people do, because reality is there is a whole percentage of people watching this time that are relatively new to this, that haven't watched, you know, 8 World Cup cycles as you and I have. And just making sure everybody understands, just, you know, look at the group you're in. You can hope for the best, but it's harder than you may anticipate. And part of that is because this country may not have exactly the right guy to play that number nine position.
Yeah, although they're so much stronger in other ways. I think there's a lot of intangibles with this team. There are a lot of intangibles that factor in a team advancing out of group play. And some of those intangibles are going to affect the U.S. like it hasn't before. We can talk about that when we talk about their, now that we know their group, we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But I think in terms of the ability to draw from your pool and put together a good team, this is the we're far and away in the best situation we've ever been in.
Yes, and that kind of that's kind of why I'm harping on this setting expectation thing, because you and I have been through this cycle so many times when they were literally pulling from guys in college to come to the tournament, right? Mm-hmm. Or guys that were barely playing even at a professional level. And now we are this country has a dearth of talent that I get it, it's not like Germany, and it may not be like Brazil, but it's unlike anything we've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. But despite that reality, the globe is covered with teams with way more talent that never even get to the quarterfinals.
Right.
Of
or
the
get
World
out
Cup,
of their group.
Or even
frankly.
Get out of their group. Yeah. And that's just the reality. And that's why I feel like I feel some sort of sense of, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking at? Like, I feel
angst.
Like a responsibility to try to just set expectations.
Yeah. And you're basing it on the our dilemma or our fear that the nine position is going to be an issue. And I think Berhalter is going to have to figure out a way to play this tournament without a true nine.
Right. And that's why I think Jesus is such an interesting prospect, because he does see that. I think everybody's watching the things that he misses, and those are valid things to criticize. But what I think a lot of people don't pay attention to is all of his movement off of the ball, the runs that he makes, the fact that he can come deep and interact with the midfield. Yeah. Because this team, and our friend Buzz has talked about this team is really built for, you know, highlighting Christian Pulisic or Giovanni Reyna or Tim Weah, these winger types that are dangerous.
Yeah, Aaronson.
And of all the people that can play that position, Jesus is probably the guy that's the best connector or the best puzzle piece to fit there if you're going to assume that most of your goal scoring is going to come from something other than the nine position.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's what I was going to say, too, is if Jesus is not going to be the one that you're going to rely on to do the scoring, then you need to get the production elsewhere.
But that said, you and I can, because we've watched this out of him for a long time now, even dating back to his time when he was with the academy. Jesus is a finisher. That is one of his qualities.
He's been doing it in MLS this year.
He's been doing it in MLS. Yeah. You know, national team level's another deal. Just when Jesus doesn't have to think about it, he is a deadly finisher.
Right.
And one of those goals I thought was really good, because he actually, the one, the pass through the middle in the run, he had a lot of time, mm-hmm. and you and I have seen him mess that one up multiple times mm-hmm. in his career.
And it was clinical the way he finished.
But it was perfect.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, man, he's just, you start to press too much because you're doing everything else right, but you're still not getting that goal, and then you start reading what people are writing, and once he scores that first goal, then you just loosen up, and this is what happened. He scores four.
Yes. Now, it was four against Grenada. And Andy and I can tell you a quick story back in the 90s about a young man that had joined the national team named Eddie Johnson, who was playing for Dallas, got a call up to the national team, and rocketed to the top of the scoring charts for the United States mm-hmm. on the heels of playing CONCACAF Minnows.
Mm-hmm. He scored like six goals in one game or something.
Something ridiculous like that. And he was very young, and he was very athletic. And very immature, and he just kind of evaporated into the ethernet after that.
So he had a decent career, but he didn't skyrocket the way people thought he would.
Yes, exactly. But that's my point is, you know, scoring against Grenada is great. Getting four is great, but we need to see that from Jesus in the games that we didn't see it in, like the Morocco game and the Uruguay game. So I think that's, at least in my head, that's the way to consider it and think about it. There's so much more to talk about with the U.S. men's national team, some of the performances, what's coming up here. Specifically, the thing that I want to talk about with Andy is this great debate about the midfield and who should be playing in that. And we'll get into that next here on The Kick Around. All right. Good going, Creighton. I don't know if you realize why it's entertaining that this song is playing. This is like the hot song right now, Andy.
We're so hip.
Because if you were watching Stranger Things, you'd know why.
Haven't started the new season yet. No. Are you all into it?
I've been watching, yes. Yeah? Yes. And this song plays a really big part of it, and of course it's from, you know, circa early college for us.
Our days.
Yeah, our days back in the day. Do you know that I think I heard Corby talking about this. When it originally came out in the States, it never got higher than number 30, but because of Stranger Things, it's top 10 hit or whatever.
That's funny.
Pretty ridiculous. Yeah. Welcome back to the Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on The Ticket. There is Andy. My name is Peter. We were talking about the U.S. men's national team big win over Grenada, 5-0.
Skunk.
Man, it's tough to watch. It's tough to watch those games because it's
hard to evaluate. Yeah, right. I mean, the goalkeeper wasn't tested. The defense really wasn't tested. Kellen Acosta, who was a holding mid and supposed to play defensive mid this game, doesn't have to defend at all. So, okay, we see Kellen kind of push up a little bit, and we see him play more of an eight, I guess. But are you really testing the team? And what's terrible about this is that, you know, they have to use this game.
Well, the difficulty of the game is that you can come out of it looking bad or hurting your situation.
If you're a player, even the national team, your image, I guess, right?
Yeah. And
nothing to gain.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So Jordan Morris is a guy who I think didn't help his case.
No, not at all.
Because he wasn't in the game a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
He hasn't looked great when he's suited up for the national
He's still coming
team.
Off that bad leg injury. And yeah. it's you know, he's going to have a really stellar start or a run through this MLS season, I think, for him to keep a position. Jesus obviously helps his situation. I don't know if it helps. It helps stave off the criticism in finishing the four goals. But one of the more interesting arguments and discussions that are happening amongst fans is Berhalter's plan for the midfield. Mm. And there is this growing faction of followers that believe MMA, the Weston McKennie, the Musa Siuna, Unamusa, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and Adams.
And Tyler Adams.
Yeah.
Is the answer.
Well, they're the front runners to be the three starters.
I think there is a growing set of people that think somebody out of that group needs to sit for one Brendan Aaronson.
Yeah, but then you can also play Aaronson out on the wing.
But that's not where he's effective.
No. And then I would also, especially after seeing him against Grenada, again, not a great team, but I've liked him a lot whenever he's suited up and has seen minutes. I think he's really silky on the ball. Defensively, I don't know, maybe not his forte, but that's De La Torre, Luca De La Torre.
LDLT.
Is that your nickname for
him? No, that's what people... Oh, okay. I think people are tired of saying, well, you know,
Luca De La Torre every time.
Yeah, instead of Tendies. Somehow LDLT is easier to say than Luca De La Torre. There were several people that made this comment that somehow Jesus scores four goals, but De La Torre was still their man of the match.
And he was good.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
It probably helped a little bit that many of the Grenadian midfield were just traffic cones.
It did, but that's why I mentioned that when I've seen him before, I've really liked him. I don't know if you remember seeing him.
He's
always so good and calm on the ball and silky. That's the word of like a midfielder that's not fussy and doesn't break a sweat sometimes. Just silky with the ball.
You know what he's really good at that the United States doesn't have a ton of? This is something Paxton is really good at, which is progressing the ball down the field
effortlessly.
Well,
just seems like it.
By dribbling, not by passing, by carrying the ball down the field. And he's done that in multiple games. I don't know what his role is going to be in the World Cup. I don't know if it's a coming off the bench kind of guy.
Well, right now, like, you would think Aaronson is the fourth player in that three-man midfielder who was pressing one of the MMA guys, right?
You'd think.
And so De La Torre to me would fall to fifth, but I really like... Now, I'd have to pay more attention him playing against a team other than Grenada to see how he does having to go both ways.
So he's been playing in the Dutch Dutch league, and his club, Heracles, I think it's pronounced, got relegated, and I guess his deal allowed him to go find another club. So at this point, he's got to go find somewhere to play, and where he lands will be interesting. I like you. My eyeball test on the guy just hits all sorts of boxes.
Yeah.
You know, you'd like to see a guy that progresses the ball down the field. There was a couple of times in this game, and I think in previous ones, where he makes these amazing, mazy, dribbly runs, and he's so exhausted by the end of it, he doesn't make the finishing pass, or he doesn't get his shot off, and the ball gets turned over.
Yeah.
You're like, well, that's a lot of work for nothing. Mm-hmm. So that part of his game, I'd like to see him. But, man, there's just so much in there that I really like.
Yeah. Now, talking about the midfielder, there's another player we have to mention. That's basically Tyler Adams' direct backup at the holding mid, and that's Kellen Acosta.
Yeah.
So he's going to have a spot on the roster because there's really no other player right now that is like the direct substitute for Adams, right?
Yeah, I agree. And that warms my heart because I love to see Kellen. You know, they even said on the broadcast that he has not signed an extension with L.A. You know, he wants to get a try in Europe after the World Cup. So
this is a big opportunity.
He's going to play out this season in L.A. and then and see what happens. And you and I have watched him since he was a kid, so that's really cool. I mean, there was so much Dallas in this game. It was ridiculous.
Pop quiz.
Yeah.
Player on this roster, U.S. National Men's Team, this Windows roster, after Yedlin, who's got the most caps?
Player on this roster after Yedlin.
Kellen Acosta.
Is it? Yeah, that was the
Unbelievable.
One.
Unbelievable.
It is pretty.
He's one of the senior citizens on the team.
Yeah, well, he's 26, man. And so, and that's, this is really his last chance to go play in Europe. And I know that's something he's wanted to do for some time. Again, it's a game that I don't think you can really judge good or bad on any, on Kellen's performance in that particular game. But to your point, he's really Tyler Adams' only person that can play that role. You know, so I'm trying to get, you know, just thinking about the midfield situation. Aaronson is so good. His energy level is so high. He's so unrelenting in a way. And the weird part of that is are you at all worried about Weston? Because in the two appearances in the 90 minutes total between these two games we've seen Weston, he does clearly look like a guy who's a fraction of his normal self. And how hard is it going to be for him to get back to the level he's at? Does he have the time?
He does. For the kind of injury that he went through, I mean, he's in the early stages of coming back, and there's plenty of time for that kind of injury. And he's going to be playing Serie A as well. Mm-hmm. I don't worry about Weston as much. What I will say about this midfield, though, what are one of those intangibles, what are one of those factors that dictate how far a team gets in a World Cup? It's depth. And midfield depth, especially, is really, really important in a World Cup. And I feel this U.S. team, for the first time, like, we are talking about substituting one guy for the other, and you're not going to miss much of a beat. And that's really important when you're rotating in a World Cup, when you're playing three games in a span of, 14 days?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This midfield, I think, I would be excited about
it. Well, I would certainly say that in our experience of watching the U.S. team over the course since the 80s, this is the best midfield setup this team and level of depth this team has ever had,
right?
By a factor?
Yes, correct. Now, expectations, like you said, we're not saying this is a semifinal run team or anything like that, but compared to past national teams, the intangible here that, again, works against them is experience, especially experience in a World Cup. They have zero, right?
Yeah.
And so that'll probably factor a little bit. But in terms of talent, really talented.
Yes. Three guys starting in the midfield that play for Juventus, Leipzig, and Valencia is something I never, ever thought I would say about the U.S. men's national team. And that, to me, is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So the other conversation is about goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Because you and I have been talking about this for a while, which is our concern that we have a bunch of goalkeepers, none of which are in starting positions for the most part.
Yeah.
The word is Horvath is going to start in El Salvador. There's another guy that's not getting regular time for Nottingham Forest, but he'll be in the Premier League along with Matt Turner
and
Zach Steffen.
Other guys that won't be playing a lot playing in the Premier League.
The name to watch out for and to think about is the young player that's up at Chicago, Gabriel Solonia, the Polish player that is now committed to playing for the United States and by all accounts is about to get an offer or has gotten an offer from Real Madrid.
What?
Yes. 18 years old, kid is a hot property. He did commit and come out to say that he would play for the United States and not Poland. Real Madrid apparently want him, but apparently will loan him back to the Fire.
I don't see an 18-year-old kid starting for the U.S. in a World Cup.
All right, so how do you feel about Sean Johnson?
He's your number three right now, I would think.
But what if out of all the keepers you have, the
Sean
only
Johnson?
One that is playing week in and week out?
Yeah.
And of course, if you're doing that, you got to be playing well and putting up some saves and numbers and so forth.
Because you're not going to talk about Stephen Fry in Seattle. Okay. I mean, it's Sean Johnson. But ultimately, It's a dilemma if one of these guys doesn't see playing time.
I don't know how. I mean, is Turner going to get a start over? And is he gonna be starting regulated for Arsenal?
No, none of that. They're gonna play cup games. They're gonna play cup games. But you hope, like the guy that was in goal recently for the Ukraine, right? Wasn't playing. Was it for Ukraine or maybe it was for Wales? Hadn't seen time and came up huge. It was the Welsh keeper.
Oh yes, yeah.
Right. So maybe that to me the biggest concern heading into now the next window when we can see players is figuring out the pairing for Zimmerman. That's the biggest concern. That right now will be the number one problem heading into the World Cup because you need center back pairings have to play together consistently for them to be as effective as they need to be, and we're not seeing that. We're not getting that. And that's going to be an issue.
Andy rolls in the throws the grenade in the room. We were talking about nine being the big problem or goalkeeper being the big problem. You're right. Yeah, the center back pairing that we don't know because of the injury.
That is the number one issue.
To Miles Robinson is a big deal. And whether that's Chris Richards, if he can come back and get healthy.
Right.
I'm not a big Aaron Long fan.
But those guys need time playing together.
And they've essentially only have two games left to do it.
Right. So yeah. You have two games in September.
Yeah,
good luck.
For sure.
There's your expectation setting.
Yeah, no, very much so. All right, Andy mentioned Wales. They are the final team in Group B. We'll get into some World Cup preview talk here next on the Kick Around. Welcome back to the Kick Around. Real quick, a Lars update. Our good buddy Lars Sivertsen, he is back home.
Okay.
If you haven't been paying attention, Lars hasn't been with us in a while because he broke his leg a few weeks ago and has been in the hospital.
Ouch.
In London for all this time up until I think he was sent home Wednesday. I think
broke his leg, by the way, is an understatement.
Yeah, he gnarly broke both bones in his lower left leg and another bone I think in his ankle, and it took them a good week before they could go in and perform surgery. And they've the word puzzle I've said before it was used in the description of the surgery. So hopefully Lars will be able to come back on the show here soon because we miss him very much and got a lot of questions for him. So, all right. So we've been talking about the U.S. men's national team. And as you know, Andy and I are a bit frustrated because the World Cup typically, as our circadian World Cup rhythms are out of whack because this is about the time we're anticipating the World Cup, but no, it's not until doesn't start till the week of Thanksgiving. But we do know now who the fourth team participating in Group B will be with the United States, England, and Iran, and that is Wales, as Wales did the dirty and beat up on Ukraine in that final game.
I know a lot of people, despite it being Ukraine and their issues and the whole world rooting for Ukraine, were rooting for Wales, actually, because they thought, man, the last thing the U.S. needs in their group is another sentimental favorite that, you know, would cause people to root against them. Although, what does that matter if people around the world are rooting for Ukraine when they play the U.S.? I mean, does it affect your play? Not really, right?
No.
That's why I was rooting for Ukraine.
I didn't want all of that, the weight of that, I'm glad.
You just didn't want psychologically to have to root against Ukraine when you were playing them.
Well, I think if Ukraine had successfully navigated these waters, winning both of those games on the road in Scotland and in Wales and qualified for the World Cup, they began to become that effing team kind of storyline, and that's what you don't want in your group.
Yeah.
Okay? That was the reason why I didn't
want them. Well, the group is already rocky in so many ways as it is without you inserting Ukraine, because it's England and the U.S. and the history there, Iran and the U.S. and all that. And now it'll be England and Wales, which that's, it. You know, kind of a classic go in its own way.
Okay.
Right?
Well, this is the thing I've been waiting to talk to you about, because this is the element that I think is, looking at this group from the United States point of view, what is the style of play that you think the United States could least likely benefit from?
What style do they need to play?
No. What style of opponent is the most problematic, in just general terms, what style of play is the most problematic for the United States, do you think?
Speed getting in behind the defense, or somebody that presses high?
Oh, okay. I wondered if teams that bunker play very defensively and make it hard to get behind them.
Sure, that's hard for a lot of teams.
It is. Oh no, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But when you look at this group, that is a primary element to each of their three opponents. England under Southgate is a very defensive, kind of direct-minded attack team. Wales is certainly that way, and by all accounts, Iran is too.
Yeah, Iran is kind of like a wild card. We don't know much about them, right?
I mean, here's the reality. In the qualifying cycle, Iran only played one team that was ranked in the top 50 in FIFA. And I don't even know if they have any, like, they had a game against Canada lined up that got canceled because of the squabble between those two countries, mm-hmm. as they have a squabble with everybody, I think.
Yeah, my guess.
I don't even know if Iran has any games scheduled between now and the World Cup. I'm sure they'll play something.
They will.
But how many, is it going to be another World Cup team? I don't know.
Yeah, right. Iran typically, they perform decently in World Cups when they qualify into the World Cup. They're not a bad side. It's not like a weakling out of Asia. It's one of those like South Korea. Lots of experience in these kind of events and tournaments. But they're a wild card because you don't know what you're going to get within that specific World Cup from a country or a national team like Iran. This group, though, if you add up all the team rankings out of all the groups, like, it's the new group of death.
It is the toughest group. If you go by ELO or FIFA rankings,
now,
on average, it is the hardest group.
Unlike most other World Cups, all these groups are pretty even, top to bottom, right? There's no runaway group of death.
That's what's unique about this World Cup is there is no...
But still, within that scenario, Group B is still the, quote, group of death. So I just don't find it a group so difficult that the U.S. can't advance. Do you fear Wales? I would fear Wales a lot less than I would fear Ukraine because of all the issues you just spoke about with Ukraine, right?
No, but...
Their best player is, about to retire. He would have retired. Bale.
Right, Gareth Bale.
Gareth Bale would have retired had they not advanced to the World Cup. And now he's going to seek a six-month contract somewhere just to play.
Right.
It's their best player. He's their difference maker. This is the team in your group. So England, good. One of the favorites, yes. Then you have a wild card like Iran. I'm now resetting expectations.
Yes.
Now I'm just convincing myself that there's no way we don't advance out of this.
By the way, if you're relatively new to the show, I just want to remind everybody, there is nobody I know on this planet that possesses the internal knowledge and understanding and passion for the World Cup like Andy Swift. The man is a walking encyclopedia of World Cup knowledge and trivia. I guess my thinking is what I think plays to the United States' advantage is the order in which their three games happen. Mm-hmm. They get Wales first, they get England second, and they get Iran last.
Right.
And I think if you think about how the other three teams in the group have to play their games, mm-hmm. I think that plays to the Americans' advantage.
Yeah,
for second place, probably.
Right, because the U.S. will play Iran, knowing what they have to do to advance out of group, while England and Wales have to go at it.
Yes.
And Wales, look, nothing against the U.S., but Wales' big game in this World Cup is against England. I mean, this is the natural rival. Wales hasn't played in a World Cup. The only other World Cup they played was in 1958. So when we talk about the U.S., one of their weaknesses heading into this World Cup is the lack of World Cup experience, particularly the players, because as an organization, the U.S. Soccer Federation does have experience playing a World Cup. There's a lot that comes into that as you prepare for a World Cup and what you do in that country and how you set up for it, although lots of countries are going to have weird issues to deal with in this particular World Cup. But Wales has zero experience in World Cups,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Other than 58. Anybody working
accommodations,
in the Wales Federation, players,
how you
coaches,
get people fed,
yes, there's so
rest,
many things.
Medical,
yes.
All that stuff. Is
this
all
is,
yes.
This is why the same 7-8 countries have won World Cups. It's depth, and it's just the know-how of how to handle this tournament. And so the U.S. is not going to be out-advantaged in that regard by Wales. I think Wales is this is why you're rooting for Wales also against Ukraine, because mm-hmm. we all feel Wales is going to be not an easier opponent, but a more desirable opponent in your group than Ukraine would have been.
Yes, in my opinion, largely for the intangibles. I still think Wales possesses enough quality on the field to create problems for the United States, specifically in set-piece play because of Gareth Bale, and the fact that they tend to be a more defensive bunker and then try to beat you on with pace and physicality going forward. Yeah. And that's where, if I have a concern about the United States in this tournament, it's going to be that, because that's what England's going to throw at you. And I'm assuming, based on the little that I understand about what Iran has in their bag, they're going to do the same thing. And so I assume Berhalter is going to figure out. That's why I think the MMA midfield is likely what you're going to see, because he's going to want to have that defensive cover to help with that style of play.
Yeah.
And again, I feel this way right now, and I'll reset when we get closer to the tournament. Based on what I know today, the United States should get out of this group either at first or second, one of the two. I don't know. It depends on how all these other games go. But I feel good at this point about the United States' chances of getting into the knockout rounds.
And that's saying something, if you're in the group of death. So, again, how far we've come with our expectations heading into a World Cup compared to other years. Right.
Yeah. For
so
sure.
So, anything changed for you? We've gone through the World Cup groups in past shows, and we will as we get closer to the tournament. But has your perception of any particular team changed in recent months since they've held the draw? Are you less fearful of some teams, more fearful of others?
In the group, or just mean in general?
Just in general. Well, let's talk about the group. England. Do you still feel the same way about? 2022, this is like 8 years ago, we started talking about this English team and a little bit of how this is not a golden generation, but a really good, strong generation of English players. And I think back in the 2014 tournament, we talked about how the 2022, because of all the players that were coming up in the English system, the 2022 tournament was going to be England's World Cup. Mm-hmm. And here we are. Do we still feel like they're one of the favorites to win this particular World Cup? And I would put him as one of the favorites, personally.
I think so. But I also have watched that country get in its own way multiple times in major tournaments.
All right, staying clear of penalty kick shootouts. Can they win the World Cup? Of course, yes.
Sure.
They're one of the teams that can, especially a tournament being played in Qatar when, man, there's so many ways to handicap a World Cup and certain things that are always taken into account in how you handicap a World Cup and teams that are looked at as the favorites. But when you're going to play a tournament in Qatar where everything is thrown out the way, you're not even playing it during the normal summer. Teams are not going to be able to prepare the same way. The way you set up training camp is going to be so different. It's just going to be a weird World Cup. And so I think England, because of that, like the Germanys and the Brazils and Argentinas, it's not going to be a normal World Cup, I think England has a decent chance of coming away with the trophy.
I agree with you, and that's just in Group B. I think your question to me a little while ago was, is there a team that's changed? Mm-hmm. I'm starting to think that the Dutch have something.
Because of the way they spanked Belgium, or just in general?
Well, there's a lot of really good players, a lot of really nice quality on that team. There was some quality to their play, if I remember correctly, in the European tournament last summer or the previous summer. Mm-hmm. I just have a sense that maybe, and plus they're in a really ridiculously easy group.
That's the easy group,
right?
Yeah, and then how do you feel about Belgium after what they showed against? I mean, they turned around and then beat somebody up pretty. I think Poland. Right after that, pretty badly, like I guess to show like they still have it. It's an aging team.
Their big problem in my mind is just that they're so old in the back more than anything else. Like and if they're going to get up against anybody with some young speed and quality up front, I think you're just hoping Courtois saves you.
Yeah.
And I guess he's capable of that. Yeah. I think that they've missed their opportunity.
Yeah, I don't see him as a top four team, like finishing or going through to the semis.
I don't have a particular, I think Brazil has this really good sense that Brazil's going to do really well. The Argentinians will do well.
I'm probably
all the normal players. Like I don't feel like there's a, you know, we're so early in this. We've got so many months before this thing starts. I don't have a sense in particular that there's some sort of new flavor getting ready to bubble to the top.
And who's you know, what is form like for a key players belonging to each of these national teams? What's their form like? Come October and November.
It's interesting. I was reading an article the other day that in the Premier League, the top that there has been a request by the FA to not when so they have not announced the Premier League schedule yet.
Yep.
So the request has been by the FA that they consider when they do the schedule for the season, because again, the World Cup's going to happen in the middle of the Premier League season, that they do not schedule matches of big six clubs against each other in like the 3 or 4 weeks leading up to the World Cup. So no Chelsea versus Liverpool, Man U versus Arsenal.
That's a big ask, and that's to rest key English national team
players. Yeah, so those guys aren't having to play the hardest games in the weeks. And I'm sure there are other FAs that are very much into this. I'm sure the German FA, I'm sure the, you know, all the other FAs that have got national team players playing in the Premier League are all like, that's a really, really good idea.
Yeah, right. And some FAs control league play and others don't. England, there's the FA, but then the Premier League controls the Premier League schedule. So that'll be interesting. The good thing about that is that all national teams will kind of be in the same boat, right?
Yeah. There's just not a lot of games to be played. I mean, if you go and look on anybody's schedule, there are no other games scheduled for these. A lot of these teams, like the United States, doesn't have any other games scheduled between now and the World Cup. Now, there's a September window, as you mentioned earlier.
And they want to play two teams from Asia, is what they have said. But the fact that they don't even have those lined up, maybe they're in talks, who knows. But it's true for a lot of national teams right now. Now, there will be Nations League games in September, and that's the benefit that UEFA has with their Nations League set up. I would want CONCACAF perhaps to group A in Nations League. That's the top tier of the Nations League, to bring it down from 12 to 8 teams to make those games a little bit more meaningful. You get rid of the Grenadas a little bit and put them in the second tier, those vying to get up to the top tier. Does that make sense?
It does, because if you look at what's going on in UEFA, those teams that are playing in their Nations League tournament, England's getting to play Italy today. They got to play Hungary.
There's some World Cup prep for you there. That's real World Cup prep.
Yes.
Right.
And because of the CONCACAF's thinness as a confederation, the U.S. is preparing and having to play a Nations League game against Team 172 in the FIFA rankings.
And that's probably why in September the Nations League, the CONCACAF Nations League didn't get scheduled, is to give the U.S. and Mexico the opportunity to go up in Canada, an opportunity to play better games.
I know we got to go, but you'll know this. Could the United States Federation have forfeited or bypassed playing in the Nations League so that they could have used this window just to play and schedule friendlies against, you know, higher-ranked teams?
Yeah, the problem is this window, they couldn't have played against European teams because they're playing Nations League and they're not allowed to play friendlies during Nations League windows.
Could they have played South American?
They could have played South American, but I think if you then start, I don't know, forfeiting games, the bigger issues happen.
Yeah, maybe throwing their U-23s in those games or something.
But I guarantee you that's why they're not guarantee you, but I would bet that this is why they haven't scheduled games in September.
Yeah. The U.S. does play Tuesday in another Nations League game against El Salvador. It is in El Salvador, and as we said earlier, Haji Wright is supposed to start at the 9, and even Horvath is supposed to start in goal. The rest of it is weird. And just to kind of reiterate why the Nations League is so wonky, the next set of games for this exact same group in the exact same tournament won't happen until March of next year.
Yeah, but that's because I think they avoided playing in September to give the qualifying teams a chance
to play better.
So they
could play really, really, really good teams. All right, when we come back, let's get into talking more about what's been going on over in UEFA and the Nations League and Andy's big Liverpool transfer surprise next here on the Kick Around. I could not do that, by the way. Welcome back to the Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on the Ticket. All right. Let's see. Where are we headed here?
We were going to talk about Nations League.
We were. Well, European
soccer.
Nations League. This has been a very national team-centric yes. day.
So the European Nations League, you know, while we talk about how...
Hold on. It's better than the CONCACAF Nations League.
Well, that's...
because as you and I were in break, we were looking at the schedule, and there are literally teams scheduled to play in the CONCACAF Nations League tonight I've never even heard of.
Right.
I've never heard of Bonaire.
Yeah, some of them are territories as opposed to countries that get to field a team within CONCACAF for events this.
At 3 p.m. today, the U.S. Virgin Islands are playing something called Bonaire in the CONCACAF Nations League.
Yeah. And you know, to the detriment of teams like the U.S. and Mexico and Canada that have to prep for a World Cup playing in Nations League, in the European Nations League, those World Cup countries, those countries that qualified for a World Cup, get to play against, you know, non-qualifiers like Hungary and
Italy.
And Italy.
Yeah, yeah, England is playing Italy right now, and that game is 0-0 in the 78th minute.
Yeah.
It's not on TV locally. You have to have, I think you have to have Fubo or something called VIX.
Okay.
There's a whole new streaming platform called VIX, VIX, that I think has somehow picked up some English Nations League broadcasts. Germany is tied against Hungary in Hungary. I guess the kids are booing the Germans. And the Netherlands and Poland are tied at 2. Wales is losing to Belgium 1-0.
All good games. And teams actually, they mostly try in the Nations League because it does affect your FIFA World or your rankings, which then affect, you know, how you get placed in qualifying groups and how you get placed in the World Cup and all that. Games matter, and you try to stay within your tier within the Nations Cup tournament, right? So those teams in Tier 1 try to not get relegated to Tier 2.
Yeah, but isn't it ridiculous? I was reading this article, I don't remember where, today, and I'm sure you saw the same quotes from Virgil van Dijk and Kevin De Bruyne, who talked about how the Nations League is just not interesting to them. And they're also expressing, I think, a fair concern about the amount of games they're being asked to play. It's like, guys, we just finished our league play, and now you've given us a four-game national team window.
Right. So part of the issue is that because of COVID, remember COVID delayed and postponed a lot of tournaments and league play, and so there was a ripple effect, and now we're not really dealing with COVID now, but the ripple effect is that a lot of these tournaments and leagues, their schedules were compressed.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, league play lasted a little bit longer, and now and right away they have to get these games in because other tournaments were delayed, and it just pushed everything up, and now we have the tournament, the World Cup, being played in November. So it kind of compressed the schedule, just the overall soccer schedule in the world, league play, friendly windows, and also windows for tournaments. And this is why this is happening. Under normal circumstances, these games would be played in normal breaks for international play. And instead of playing random scrimmages and friendlies, they'd be playing these Nation League games. And I think they would probably prefer that. Just happens that we're playing in 2022 is kind of an odd year.
It is. The problem is, and I suspect we are going to be seeing the after effects of the, I'm just going to say it, catastrophe of scheduling a World Cup in Qatar, which means it has to be played in November and December.
We're already seeing,
No. What I'm saying is the after effects of it being played in the winter is going to be felt for probably another total
cycle, right?
I think it's going to be 2024 before you really get back to normal.
Yeah.
Because, just think about the upcoming league seasons and how those players that are playing in the World Cup, or the players, even, you know, the clubs managing players playing in the World Cup leading up to the tournament, and then the after effect of what happens to them coming out of the tournament.
Right.
Especially players on national teams that make it into the knockout rounds or to the, you know, the final stages of the tournament.
Yep.
And what is their condition going to be like?
Yeah, because when you play a World Cup in the summer, you have these situations, right? Teams advance, and some players have to play all the way up to semis and finals, and then league play starts. But there is a little bit of a break, because when the World Cup stops, leagues are just playing their preseasons. The training camps are just starting at the club level. and those guys can take a little bit of a break before the season starts. In this case, the tournament is being played in between during the season. The leagues are taking a break for the World Cup. They're stopping play for World Cup. They're going to resume quickly thereafter.
And to make it even worse, not only it's like there's like a week break between mm-hmm. the stoppage of a season and having to join the team, their national team, and going to the World Cup, but to make your point even more effective, is that in a normal World Cup cycle, those players not only get a little bit of a break before the season starts, but they get to refine their form at the beginning of a season. They're going to have to rejoin their club right. after a World Cup tournament at the beginning of the second yeah. half of a
yeah.
season.
Where games matter.
Where games yeah. matter and things are going on.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the other thing. Most World Cup years, all World Cup years, league play ends in early May. World Cups typically start in mid-June. That's 6 weeks that national team coaches and staffs have with their national team players to set up camp. And even if they're not playing games, just to be together, they're going to have 7 days from the end of league play till they get together and play their first World Cup. The U.S. is going to have 7 days with all the guys together. 7 days.
I thought the U.S. had figured out with MLS that they got a bigger window because the MLS season will end.
But the European players are going to join up, and they're going to have 7 days with everybody together.
Yeah, like I think to your point, while the U.S. doesn't get has the disadvantage of playing on day one, they have the advantage of, except for the European players.
Which is most players now on that
roster. Well, that's true. Okay, yeah, I hadn't thought
of
that
way. I think it's seven guys, they said, that are part of this nucleus of players that are going to play in the World Cup, play in MLS. And they'll bring other MLS guys just to kind of keep the camp active.
Because I think this World Cup is going to be so wheels off for a whole lot of reasons.
It's hard to handicap.
It does make me wonder if this is the World Cup, that effing team that isn't one of the normals actually win this tournament.
That's a great point. If it's going to happen, this might be the tournament where that happens.
Like you think about the Premier League season when Leicester won it, and you go back and realize, do you remember that Leicester won that season by 10 points? Liverpool, Chelsea, Man City, Man U, Arsenal, Spurs were all so bad that season.
It's crazy.
And by the way, Leicester's number of points that season are at the bottom of the scale of Premier League teams that won the Premier League in terms of point total.
So they were still
10 points ahead of everybody else. That's what I think about this particular World Cup is, with all of the scheduling problems and the weirdness of the whole thing, I just wonder if this is where somebody, I don't know.
A strong soccer country that has never won a World Cup, perhaps this is the time they win it.
What country would that be?
Holland.
Okay.
The Netherlands.
Yeah, that's right. That would be a good one.
Belgium, although I don't
think
Belgium.
Steve Davis just hugged his radio.
Yeah, right. This might be the year, but that's not a bad thought. This might be the year that a team like the Netherlands wins the World Cup. And they've gotten to finals, three of them.
Who else would that be? I'm trying to think of the Croatians.
Croatia, they've gotten to a final, and that's as far as they've gotten. Yeah, sure. Or maybe Uruguay. They haven't won a World Cup since 1950. Maybe a country like Uruguay.
Yes.
Is an opportunity.
Speaking of Uruguay, mm-hmm. we found out today from their federation that Darwin Núñez, who plays for Benfica, will not be playing for Uruguay because
he's a good player. You know why he's a good player? Because when Liverpool played him, he was so good. I hope Klopp has his eye on him.
Stop it, Andy. You've stolen the player my team wanted. So all of the signs are pointing to £100 million signing of Darwin Núñez to Liverpool is in the wings. He's not going to play for Uruguay because he's preparing for that announcement. And this is really, when you think about how times have changed, is that, you know, the bulk of my watching Manchester United, part of the enjoyment of that was watching them just pick and choose whichever players they wanted from as names rose to the top of the cream of the crop. And United would go, we want them. They would just go get them.
Like Pogba.
There's a whole bunch of them. Van Persie. Wayne Rooney. I mean,
most of them worked out.
But here's a situation where United clearly wants Núñez, but because they're not in Champions League, they got the money, but they're not in Champions League, and they don't have the glamour anymore of Liverpool.
They still
Liverpool,
have the glamour.
Man, I'm telling you, Núñez and Luis Diaz,
And a starting lineup?
Great addition. You know, and I was kind of joking about how he did so well against Liverpool in Champions League, but really that's where it started. Klopp saw him play against his team and said, I want that guy.
48 goals and 85 appearances for Benfica. Real Madrid announced the 100 million euro signing of Tchouaméni. That's a nice French player that they've added. That's a team that I didn't think had any money, but apparently still has figured it out.
Have money.
Let's see. Did you see Everton has signed Tarkowski or is about to sign Tarkowski?
Really?
Yes.
So they're going to spend money then.
Spurs has signed Perisic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From Inter.
Yeah, that was an interesting signing. I love Perisic. He scored in the last World Cup final for Croatia. Good player. Has done really well in Italy. He's 33 or 34, right? And what Spurs? I don't know. What's the motivation there?
Because he's familiar with their manager, Conte.
That's the
relationship.
Right.
And he's just going to be a guy that'll help plug in that system.
That'll
be definitely one to watch. Mm-hmm. We'll talk more transfer talk next week, but Darwin Nunez to Liverpool seems all but imminent now. And
it's a great signing. No complaints.
The rich get richer.
But this is why when we talked about how important it was to finish top four, this is why, because it does affect your ability to get players in the transfer window.
Hokadoki.
That's the difference between fourth and fifth and sixth.
Yeah, agreed. United can't buy the player that they've got the money for because he isn't playing in the tournament that he wants to play in. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, when we come back, let's talk a little crime and football next on the Kick Around. Andy, you going to go to Summer Bash next week?
Back at the Village. Have you seen what they've done?
Oh, yeah. I live pretty... I drive by it all the time. Like, yeah, it's pretty impressive. Yeah. Does not make me want to sell my house.
No.
But I'm looking forward to Summer Bash. I think I'll pedal over there and check it out. All right. Welcome back to the Kick Around. We'll do the dribble next here before the end of the show. But first, I wanted to kind of veer off the normal course of things because earlier today... I think this is somewhat surprising. Maybe it's not. The word started coming out that the civil case against Cristiano Ronaldo here in the United States has been thrown out. U.S. District Judge Jennifer Dorsey not only just threw the case out, she dismissed it outright with no option to file it again. And so if you're not aware or familiar with this story, Cristiano Ronaldo, a while ago, had been accused of essentially rape of a woman in Las Vegas. And back in 2009, I think it was. And the long and short of it was is that there was some sort of payment of several hundred thousand dollars that she accepted. But then a German newspaper got a hold of some documents that was, you know, a transcript of a conversation, and along with a lot of it, the hardest part of it was is that there was a transcript of a conversation or his testimony, Ronaldo's testimony, where ostensibly they talk about what happened between him and the woman, and he kind of admits to it, but also defending himself at the same time, and it made him look really guilty. And she filed a civil lawsuit. There was also a pending, charges against him here in the United States, which was preventing him from traveling to the United States. Those charges had been dropped a while ago.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This thing was continuing to go. So now the civil suit is out too. And the judge really was just like, look, the reason why I'm doing this is because the way the documents were obtained was illegal, and the way it was interwoven within their lawsuit was all done in bad faith, and you can't do that here. So,
and case closed and without the ability to reopen, and so that's book is shut.
Yes. So, and there's a side story about now, does that mean Ronaldo can come play in Major League Soccer?
Right.
I suppose that is, but we'll save that for a later day. And let me also say this. For those of you that just assume Ronaldo is guilty, you are more than welcome to do that. But in terms of our legal system, he's free and clear at this point,
right?
Both from civil and criminal prosecution. Yeah. That's all and over.
Yeah, the book is cleared. Okay.
Now, the reason why the timing of this is interesting, because this week I was eating lunch, listening to, I'm sure it was bad, I'm sorry, The Hang Zone or The Hard Line, talk about the Deshaun Watson situation.
Right, yeah.
And just what a ridiculous story that is.
Yes.
And I'm sure all the P1s are very familiar with this story.
Former Texans quarterback.
And now he's with the Browns, and he got and there are all of the allegations that got even worse this week.
Yep.
Like 66 different masseuses in 17 months, and even ones that haven't sued him are talking about how these awful things were going on. And I was thinking about the juxtaposition between his story and the story of Mason Greenwood from Manchester United.
Yep.
Now, just to kind of refresh everybody, Mason was a very young player, I think he's 20 now, who was an up-and-coming star in the Premier League and for Manchester United and for England. Mm-hmm. A great finisher. He's a kid that we all saw play for Manchester United in the Dallas Cup. Yeah. I used to make the regular joke that I stood next to him.
MoneyGram Mason.
Out at MoneyGram.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, back in January, some audio tape surfaced, or a video and audio surfaced, of him and his girlfriend. And I won't get into it, but it's ostensibly really hard to listen to, and it really puts him in the worst possible light in terms of him forcing himself on his girlfriend sexually, et cetera, et cetera.
Some verbal things, too.
Yeah, verbal things as well. And I just find the differences between Mason's story and Deshaun's story so weird, and I'm trying to figure out what it is that makes him different, because Deshaun has gone on to get a record-breaking contract, and Mason Greenwood has essentially evaporated from existence.
Right, and how did those two, how are they so different, right? And so, but the first thing, I think the first thing you have, in order to compare apples to apples, you have to separate the oranges a little bit. And Mason Greenwood is still under criminal investigation.
True, he's on bail.
Watson's criminal investigation was shut. And now there's just civil litigation going on. While Watson's criminal investigation was ongoing during last season, he didn't play for the Texans. The Texans basically sat him down, basically suspended him for the season. He didn't play.
Right.
Once the criminal investigation was shut down, he was then traded to the Browns. And during the civil litigation, he's being sued, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Browns did offer him this big contract. Now, the NFL is still investigating whether they're going to suspend him or not. That's that case.
Mm-hmm.
Mason Greenwood, we're not even talking civil yet. This is all still criminal. So what happened when he was arrested, because he was arrested, Man United just separated instantly.
Yeah, they
from
cut
him.
Ties completely.
Yeah, right.
He's off the website kind of thing.
And the Premier League as well, and sponsors and all that. A little bit how it happened to Watson when he was being criminally investigated. The Texans didn't suspend, they didn't officially cut him, but he didn't play all year.
Right.
So once so the question is, what will happen to Mason Greenwood if for whatever reason he is not convicted and they shut down the criminal investigation and he's found not guilty? Is United going to take him back?
Well,
and they haven't said.
No, they haven't. There's another element to this story that is different here and in England, which are the libel laws.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things that happened about the time the Mason Greenwood story happened was also the story about, Kurt Zuma kicking the cat.
Mm-hmm.
And that viral video of him abusing his cat.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of sounds funny to say out loud, but yes, there was a video somebody took of him like kicking his
pet cat
and then hitting it or whatever. And that went crazy and everybody talked about it. And it was like, why are we talking about a guy hitting a cat and we're not talking about this Mason Greenwood thing? And that's all because how much different the libel laws and how sensitive the British media is. And when they talk about things that are pending criminal investigation,
they're not allowed. The media is not allowed to talk about it.
Well,
right.
Well, what I think the way it's been explained to me is that the companies, the media companies themselves are so worried about lawsuits that they essentially have drawn a line in the sand and just said the only thing you can talk about this are clearly the black and white facts of the matter.
Yeah.
So-and-so has been accused of this, has been charged and arrested, and that's it.
And the police have said this and blah, blah, blah.
Right. And so media members, just because it's such a weird conversation, just choose not to talk about it at all.
Yeah, so there's no editorials or like columns written, opinion pieces.
Right. And so what's happened here in the United States with Deshaun Watson, even when it was all criminal, we just sat and did break segment after segment after segment,
right,
because media is handled differently here in the United States. Yeah. And I do wonder how much that affects, for better or worse, how these things happen over a course of time, both criminally and civilly, yeah, because of how the media, the differences in the media and how they deal with them.
Yeah. So my question, though, is then, like, if Deshaun Watson would have been convicted, obviously he wouldn't have been in the NFL anymore, right?
Right.
And then if Mason Greenwood, convicted, obviously he's not going to keep playing. But if he's not, if the criminal case is dropped, is he reinstated back with the team? What does Man United do at that point?
I don't know, man. I mean, Nike dropped him. Everybody dropped him. Unless there is some sort of very clear, like if the ex-girlfriend comes out and says, I made it up, or I've completely forgiven him, and I was just as much a problem.
Because in Greenwood's case, there's conversation.
Yeah, there's literally a conversation of him essentially forcing her and her saying no.
Yeah.
And him, yeah.
So that's a little bit more incriminating.
Yeah, so unless she comes out and says, oh, no, sorry, we were actually role-playing.
Yeah, so like, maybe that's also the difference. I mean,
we learned it from Andy.
It's a little bit tougher to distance yourself from something that is recorded, and Watson's stuff has not been.
Yeah.
But, the NFL is conducting their own investigation. I think he's going to be suspended. That's my opinion. I don't know, just from what I've read. And
yeah, based on things that have happened in the NFL before, you would assume that to be the case. I it's just an interesting, I think there's an interesting difference in how these things are handled in different countries.
Sure.
And these are the two that just came to mind, and then the Ronaldo thing happened today. So, when do you think Ronaldo signs with Inter Miami?
I don't think he's as interested in coming to the U.S. and playing for MLS as much. I think there's a bigger chance than Messi does. Right. I know that sounds crazy.
Chicharito put his house up for sale in L.A.
What does that mean?
Maybe the Galaxy have a big slot of money that they need to spend.
Is that where Ronaldo would want to play?
Would the Galaxy pay whatever it took to get Ronaldo on their team?
They'd find a make.
I'm asking you.
They would, if Ronaldo said, I want to play in L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think parties would find a way to make it happen. I don't think Ronaldo's that interested, honestly. I think Messi's more interested in playing in Miami than Ronaldo is in playing in anywhere in the U.S.
Post-World Cup?
This is what I think. I think if either of them, if they both come, Messi's going to come first. Neither may come. We don't know. But there's a better chance that Messi comes earlier than Ronaldo. Ronaldo still has time to play in Europe. I think Messi's a little bit just...
Really? You think so?
Yeah. Ronaldo is the fittest... He's one of the fittest athletes you've ever seen.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
He plays for your team.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
You get to see him every week. I mean, the guy's a... it's just amazing what at his age, what he's able to do.
All right, well, I'd be happy to sell him to Liverpool.
No, we don't want him. Thank you.
All right, when we come back, it's America's favorite soccer segment, The Dribble, next on The Kick Around. All right, here we go. The final segment of today's Kick Around. We're in full swing, Andy. This is when nothing gets in our way. We do Kick Arounds every weekend for the near future.
Hey, we're also the show... of record for serving as a public service show for geography lessons, right? Because we're soccer, so we're always talking about things around the world. But I did find out what Bonaire is officially.
By the way, earlier in the show, we were commenting on the fact that there is a CONCACAF Nations League game going on right now between the U.S. Virgin Islands and something called Bonaire. And that sounds like
they don't
an
even
airline
have a FIFA
to me.
Country code, right. So the reason you don't know much about Bonaire is because they used to be part of the Netherlands Antilles until 2010. That country dissolved. I've never heard of that, but that country dissolved. So,
you mean like it went underwater?
It just ceased to be a country. Ah. It used to be part of the Netherlands. So there are three parts of that country that then became special municipalities, and they're part of the Netherlands. And people in Bonaire vote in Dutch elections.
That sounds like Curaçao's story.
Very similar.
Okay.
So they're part of CONCACAF.
Which is the lesson
that
I think I learned this time last year during the previous Nations League tournament.
So the people of Bonaire can vote in Dutch elections, but they're not part of the EU and don't get EU rights. Very complicated.
See, we learned something. Yeah. Today I learned. All right, let's do it. It's America's favorite soccer segment. It is known as The Dribble. Well done, Creighton. Well, that was like done. Tight.
Man.
All right. So, oh, you can turn that up a little bit. There you go. So, first and foremost, Andy, congratulations to you and to me.
Yes.
And okay. Specifically me.
Okay.
As my household is now officially lucky for those attempting to become full-time Premier League officials. Because this week, we found out that the second yes. Dallas Cup Whelpton Homestay
right.
participant has officially been announced as a Premier League referee. The first one was from my first year,
yes,
Ian Husson, mm-hmm. who has been a Premier League assistant referee for a while.
He was on our show that year, too, right?
We he was.
Him on the show, yeah.
And by the way, we are in the final stages of actually getting him
nice.
Booked to do another an appearance from London or from England, from
right.
actually Liverpool,
yeah.
To come in and talk about being a referee in the Premier League. But this week, I found out that Tom Bramall, who was a homestay with us in 2017, was announced as the one guy promoted as a center referee in the Premier League.
He will be the man in the middle for some games we watch. Congratulations. You must be proud.
I'm terribly proud.
You raise them so well when they come stay with you. You're a proud papa.
Teach them everything they know.
You texted me within seconds of finding out, I think, right?
Yep.
This week.
He's
but
a.
That's kind of cool, actually, though, right?
Is he a Sheffield Wednesday fan?
Yeah. Okay.
He left us with a Sheffield Wednesday magnet that hangs in my kitchen.
Have you communicated with him?
Yeah,
since.
We traded WhatsApp. I have WhatsApp chats with all these guys.
Yeah, WhatsApp is the way to go.
It's the way to go,
yeah.
And he is, I think he's a bit over the moon over
yeah.
the whole thing.
Are you going to establish constant communication with him now like you do with Ian?
Yes, and okay. that's a function of just kind of gauging
okay.
how much they're
can
willing
be a whip
to put
too,
up with
right?
it.
Yeah.
Yes, the interesting thing about Ian is that Ian was the assistant VAR official for the championship mm-hmm. final
mm-hmm.
and the highly controversial
yes.
decision
yeah.
to not tell John Moss to go back and review either one of those penalty yeah. shouts in the Nottingham Forest Huddersfield match.
Non-PK calls.
Yes. That. And I had a really interesting conversation over WhatsApp with Ian about how that went down.
Okay.
And it's exactly what we think. Now, you may mm-hmm. disagree with it, mm-hmm. but ostensibly, it's like, look, this is how this works. The center referee tells us mm-hmm. what he saw, mm-hmm. he or she saw, and if the video doesn't clearly show us that anything that they describe differs,
yeah.
then there is no clear and obvious yeah. error.
And if they see something that differs, they'll ask him to go look at it for
correct.
Himself.
And in those two instances, the way Moss described it and adjudicated mm-hmm. it did not differ from
yeah.
what the video showed.
Okay.
So,
but
there you go.
Now we have a buddy of yours doing the middle.
Now I got somebody I know doing the middle.
Mm.
But hopefully Ian will be on the show here in the next few weeks. We had to yeah. pre-write some questions, and they got to go through yeah. the PGMOL and
all right.
that whole rigmarole. So I'm sure it'll be a really hardcore question and answer session. Lots and lots of softballs. All right. Next up on the list I wanted to talk about is Andy. What in the world is going on with Chile?
With their trying to get...
We talked about this, and you really took it so far as to file a complaint with FIFA.
No. We talked about we brought it up when Chile was about to do that, or when they had just filed their complaint. It's a player that plays for Ecuador, that was born in Colombia, that now plays for Ecuador. And, of course, it's not illegal to be born in one country, play for another national team. If you go through the proper... do the proper protocols and
tried to sneak your way into the World Cup, didn't you, Andy?
And so well, I think the complaint was, did Ecuador try to sneak in the World Cup by playing a player that was ineligible? It was far-fetched.
Are you proud of or embarrassed by your federation?
Personally, I would have preferred they not go down that avenue. It looks petty. And now I hear they're going to appeal the decision, looks even more petty, yeah.
So I take you to question number two.
Yeah.
What is going on with your Canadian national team? Can you afford to be foregoing pre-World Cup warm-up matches?
No. So the game against Iran that got canceled because of political reasons, they replaced that opponent with... They didn't do away with the date, the game. They replaced the opponent with Panama. And the day of, or the night before, the day of the game, we hear that the Canadian national team, the players, are going to boycott that game because they have not been able to reach a resolution with the Federation for a new contract that includes the bonuses that they will be paid for playing in the World Cup. Now, they are back to negotiating now. What happened, as you interpret the language from both sides, is that the Federation was stalling the negotiations a bit.
Uh-huh.
And the Canadians finally, like the players finally said, okay, we're not going to play to re-engage. I think the Federation was kind of like trying to wait as long as possible because you get to a certain point, then the players have to give in and, you know, you're going to the World Cup. They're back to negotiating. I think things will be worked out.
The interesting side note in there is in the players' press release is how the male players for the Canadian national team see payment of the World Cup prize money differently than the deal that was cut between the men and women of the United States,
right,
which was essentially we're going to take any money, both teams win, throw it in a pile, and split it up 50-50. The Canadian men's team's like, no, that's our money. We want a bigger percentage of our money.
They do want some kind of equal pay language.
Just not
but
with
it's a
the
little
FIFA.
Different. Now, okay, so let me say this. The U.S. women earn a lot more money than the Canadian women in terms of what can go in that pile. So, I mean, the U.S. women are considered the top national team in the world, and they get a lot of prize money on their own, right? So they really do contribute to that pile. The other thing, too, though, that is that has to be done first, and I think and both the women and the Canadian men are a little bit blind to what the Federation, the Canadian Federation, is actually generating in revenue, because they have a deal with the equivalent of Soccer United Marketing Sum in Canada. There's a company that controls and handles all their sponsorship revenue.
Sorry, I just come up with a really awful joke, and I can't say it on the radio.
So, but they haven't disclosed. They're not transparent what those numbers are.
Right.
So nobody knows really what the Federation
is. It just seems to be really crummy time to be protesting your player deal when you're also trying to go to your first World Cup forever.
Yes.
Speaking of the women's national team, we got the bad news that Caterina Macario tore her ACL. She is one of the big up-and-coming. She's the player from Brazil that decided to play for the United States, which just felt like the rich get richer. Mm-hmm. She is an amazing soccer player. She plays over in France for Lyon, I think.
Yeah, she just won, like,
a balloon to, she's the best player in the world. Well, she tore her ACL. She's going to be out for 6 months. The good news is that while it means that she won't be available for qualifiers, the next Women's World Cup isn't until next year. But that is not good. Now, also related to this conversation, not ACLs, but the contract. Remember last week when I told you about Walker Zimmerman announcing that he was considering taking up the fact that now that everything's equal schmequel between the men and women, he was thinking about doing the daycare trick that the men had previously not had? Mm-hmm. Have you seen the video the U.S. Federation posted this week of Walker's young child hanging out with the U.S. men's national team?
The Federation came out with the video?
Yes. The U.S. men's soccer team on their Twitter and Instagram and TikTok account, there is a 2-minute video of all of the different players, Pulisic, Areola, Weston McKennie, all of the players playing peekaboo and
that's great.
You know, all sorts of childish games with Walker Zimmerman's young child who is in camp with them because they are offering childcare so that Walker's wife could get some time off. And that is a byproduct of the new player agreement.
Yeah. That the men also get some of this care.
I don't know if I want my men's national team doing daycare and playing with babies.
It's all about
supposed to be focusing on the game.
It's all about keeping harmony in the locker room. Harmony in the room.
You haven't really lived until you've seen Christian Pulisic play peekaboo with an 18-month-old.
Nice.
It's true. All right, Andy, now I'm really going to put the screws to you before we end the show today. It was announced this week by the World Cup Dallas group that this Thursday, June the 16th, they are hosting a watching party.
Correct.
Now, what could we be watching? Could we be watching the announcement of which American countries will get World Cup
American
games?
Cities? Yeah.
Yeah, American cities, yes, not American countries.
Correct. The FIFA will announce the venues that they have chosen, selected for the 2026 World Cup. Now, the U.S. was slated to get 10 out of the 16 cities that the U.S. had bid to be a host venue. They were going to get 10, but Canada, which was due to get 3, I think Edmonton has pulled out.
Okay.
So Canada's going to get one less, which means the U.S. is now going to get 11. Well, that improves the chances that Dallas is one of the venues.
All right. I'm about to put my hand around your throat and press you up against the wall, Andy, and insist that you tell me, is Dallas getting the final?
We have no idea. FIFA is the only one that knows, and they won't announce that on the 16th.
Is SoFi in LA on the list still?
Yes. Yet?
They are?
Yeah.
Okay, so they didn't back out?
No.
Okay. Because I swear I read an article where they weren't going to spend the money to do the adjustment to the stadium.
Right. Everything I've read and heard is that they're still in it. And so is the stadium in New York, in Jersey.
Yeah.
In East Rutherford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
East Rutherford. Yeah.
East Rutherford.
It's Met Stadium.
Met
up
Stadium,
in Jersey.
And then, you know, Dallas is considered one of the favorites. Hopefully one of those important games. But
Dallas is also really big on getting the media center they had in 94,
yeah,
the broadcast center.
I think the all talk is that Atlanta and Dallas are the two favorites for that one.
It'll be interesting. Are they talking about playing World Cup games in the mechanical butthole of Atlanta United's stadium?
Atlanta's considered one of the favorites to get games as well, to be one of the venues.
Sorry, I wasn't very professional in that description, Andy. You seem disappointed
te gusta el estadio? You don't like that stadium, huh?
No, it's a great stadium. I just think its roof opening is unfortunate, as they say. All right. So Thursday, what time is that announcement?
Late afternoon.
And again, I think you may have said this and I didn't hear it. They're only announcing the cities. They're not announcing what games they'll get.
They're going to announce the venues that have won the right to host a World Cup game.
And the Death Star is the only stadium in Dallas that is under consideration.
AT&T Stadium, correct.
Oh, you're not allowed to call it the Death Star?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
And but there are other venues within the Metroplex that are going to be training sites if Dallas is a venue.
And can you help me get a job doing something with the
FIFA?
World Cup?
You want to work for FIFA?
Hell yeah.
Have Sepp Blatter's number. Why don't you give him a call? By the way, their trial started this week, I think.
All right.
His trial.
All right, so that's Thursday. I'm sorry, what did you say? What time is this?
Late afternoon.
Late afternoon.
Yeah.
All right. And where's the watching party?
At Discovery Center downtown.
Okay.
18 Discovery Gardens.
All right. We retweeted it over at the Kick Around. All right. That does it for another episode of The Dribble, America's favorite soccer segment. And we're now done with another episode of the show, Andy.
It went by fast.
It did. Well, so Andy, you still retain one of your four national teams that you claim allegiance to in the World Cup, Croatia.
Canada? Does Canada not count as a national team just because they're battling their federation?
You have two.
Yeah.
If it was a Canadian-Croatian final.
They're in the same group, dude. So we're going to get that game out of the way early.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Do you have an extra spare room in your house?
It's going to be some swift household warring going on. All right. Thanks to Jonathan for producing today, Jacob for doing tickers, and Creighton for running a super tight board. P1s. We do love and adore you. Go outside, get stuck in, and win your 50s.
These are the biggest boobs you'll ever see.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM, Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM, Flower Mound. A Cumulus Media Station.